saw that Bob Dylan movie.
Oh, yeah?
With old Timmy C. Timmy C. Chalamet's. What, I need you to watch it.
Funnily enough, I am watching it because I've got a little movie club with my friend Paul. He just texted me 5 minutes ago to arrange it the next day, a week away. And he said, what about the Bobby D movie? And I said, go on then.
You'll do it when Paul suggests. But yes. Muggins McGee over here.
Yes.
You would have told me, if you would have just said, no thanks, I don't need that in my life. Oh, but homespun movie club with your best friend Paul. Oh, yes, yeah. Please, I'll have a little bowl of that. Well, if you talk to him first about it, I don't want to, I just forget it. if you've said it or discussed it with him before you speak to me about it, I don't want to hear a word. Or actually, no, you have to guarantee anything and everything you tell me is fresh off the pile and it's not recycled garbage from your chat with Paul.
Can't do that.
What?
Because Paul and I will touch all areas.
I don't think you will.
Our chat spreads real broad.
Well, if you let me speak, I will bring up things that you hadn't even thought of and you'll go, oh, fuck, yeah, me and Paul should have talked about that, and then I'll get fresh stuff.
I think you'll bring up things that I haven't thought of. I don't think you'll touch on anything that Paul hasn't thought of.
No, but I'll get stuff out of you that Paul wouldn't.
What? Rage.
I'll milk you.
Paul would never pull my pants down. He's a good guy.
Yeah, no, he just wants to have normal conversations and I want to win.
Is Paul my horror Tim? Is that what this is? It's like, you've got horror Tim and I've got Paul and never the twain shall meet.
I guess, although you have met horror Tim.
No, I mean Paul and horror Tim will never meet.
Right.
I don't think I've met horror Tim, though. I've no memory of that.
That's a lovely little callback. That'll really hurt Tim when he listens to this podcast.
Well, he loves horror. He loves pain, you know? He doesn't even like horror. I was thinking of someone else when I called him Horror Tim the first time around. But it's pretty funny, isn't it? Just to keep doing it.
Yeah, keep doing it. Keep doing it.
Keep doing it. Actually, as soon as I remembered who he was, I was like, oh, that guy's lovely. Really like that guy. But unfortunately, he's Horror Tim now.
Well, he's actually mild concern. He's on Substack. He writes a great theatre Substack. I would recommend anyone who's interested in theatre. You won't get any theatre chat here, but he writes wonderfully about the theatre, what's going on, good shows. So, I guess if you Google mild concern and Substack.
Yeah, you'll probably find it if you Google those two things together.
And then leave a comment on his anything that he writes.
Saying, hi, is this Horror Tim?
Horror Tim. Yeah, is this Horror Tim? Let's see. Can we see? I will find out if that happens.
Yeah,
I just want to see how far the ripples of this podcast go.
Do you know, I don't know about you, Adam, but have you ever thought that theatre is just movies for boring people?
No, because we've talked about theatre before, and you love theatre.
It's true. It's true. It's not theatre.
It's a completely different form. Cinema, as Martin Scorsese discusses, it's everything. It's all about montage and the art of the cut.
Yeah.
And theatre, you can turn your head and it's all and choose what you're looking at.
You are the director
in the moment. Yeah, and
it's all alive and living.
And it's different tone of it's completely different.
Yeah,
that's why most theatre plays. Or just plays, make shit films, with the exception of Glengarry Glen Ross.
Let me talk about theatre just for a minute. What about that? Can I talk about theatre for 1 minute?
Yep, hang on, let me just get my watch up. There we go. Just get a time up. And
I can't believe your watch actually makes noises.
Classic Casio. Okay, here we go. And your minute starts now.
Has my minute started now?
Yeah, when I said your minute starts now, that was your minute.
So it's only just started?
Well, yeah, you're 8 seconds in now.
8 seconds in. So it has started. I should start talking.
You can do whatever you want. It's your minute. This is the sort of thing they do in the theatre land.
No, but I don't understand. Have you actually started it? Can you start it again? Because I didn't realise you'd started it.
No, because I said I've started it. You want me to go back and start again?
But you said your time starts now, and I was a bit confused. And then afterwards you said your time starts now, and that's when your time's starting. But then you said it had already been 8 seconds by that point.
No, because you left a long pause.
How long's left?
How are you confused? No, I've gone back to zero.
Oh, that's a shame.
You're doing a bit.
I thought you were going to just let me do that for 60 seconds.
So that's that. Hi, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast. With me, your host, Adam Richmond. This is the show in which we chat about the movies we'd forgot we'd even seen in the first place, and who is we? And it's also not just movies, it's also films. But who is we? Well, we is me, the host, and my pal, Mr. Joe Devine, and he's sat there now. He doesn't just watch theatre, he watches movies.
That's right. Sometimes I like to watch people who've done something in real life but recorded, and so I can watch it at my own leisure later.
That sounds so perverted.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. I also watch pornography.
What was my thought about pornography? I did have a porn thought.
You've got a porn thought, have you?
No, it's gone. It's over in a second. Much like my porn. Oh, that was my porn thought. I've started writing a diary this year.
A porn diary?
Well, no. It's only like a page. It's almost like a planner. And I just want it to be a reflection of what happened in the day. There's very little self-reflection in it. It's like, I went to work, I had a shit day,
yep.
I had a cup of tea, someone was there.
It's like Alistair Campbell's diaries.
Maybe, I've never read.
That's how he writes them. It's like, they're quite interesting to read, but they're usually just like initials for names, and they are just an account of what happened.
Right, and it was a couple of days into January when I realised, I thought, oh, I have masturbated today. I don't want to write that, had a wank. It's very crass. It's very Adrian Mole.
Right.
But I would like this to be a reflection of what my days have been.
Mm.
So I thought, I know, I'll come up with a euphemism.
Yeah.
And the euphemism was, I read a bit of a book.
Right.
But then it got to the point, it's like, well, what happens if I've read a bit of a book in the day?
Right, yeah. Presumably you'll just name the title of the book that you were reading.
Right, get specific. And then I haven't been specific about what I read the book to. You know, it's just, I think that's implied. You know, the reader will have to always...
What?
I've always used pornography. I mean, whenever now I say I read a book today, that always means I pleasured myself.
I read a bit of a book. Yeah.
But reading of a bit of a book will always be to some kind of media.
Right.
Pornography.
Sure.
But I don't. That's not what I've added. That's not in the diary. That's got to be. Yeah. So it's not. It's not clean. It's not specific as I want.
Well, maybe then you should come up with. You could extend the code. So when you say I read a bit of a book today, it was, you know, the genre was crime.
I don't like that one.
Not that one. How about this? The genre was mummy. The genre was a cartoon or a comic book, you know? Then that that means it was animated
hentai.
Pornography.
Yeah, but it's never that.
Who watches that? So what about if you said instead, the genre was English mystery, you know? That sort of thing. That would correspond to a specific type of pornography.
Yes, I like that. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I read a bit of a book today. The genre was bukkake. Not bad, obviously. That's not a code at all.
No, that's just, again, that's very crackable.
Yeah.
But it always seems like a crass topic, and yet it is just a bodily function. And yet, as soon as it's discussed, it's discussed.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm?
The big time. Yeah. I think it's very considerate for you to be thinking about the readers of your diary. You know, that's big planning. That's a very self-confident man right there, writing a private diary, but still considering that people will read it in the future.
And it's more that I think I'm suspicious that someone, naming no names, uh-huh. in my house,
yeah.
will leaf through it.
Your wife.
I said naming no names.
Yeah. No, I mean, you haven't named any names. I named a name.
On today's episode, we're doing the 2000 Tom Day directed action comedy flick Shanghai Noon.
That's right.
Of course it's starring Jackie Chan and Owen Wilson and Lucy Liu and Xander Berkeley. He's fun. I love that guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's 110 mins. That is appallingly overlong for a film like this. It's at least 20 minutes too long, if not half an hour. This film should be 85 minutes, yeah, tops, and that includes blooper reel. But here we go. Here's the letterboxed. The Old West meets the Far East. And that's probably how they pitched it,
yep,
to the Hollywood execs. Chon Wang, that's played by Jackie Chan, that's supposed to be a fun pun on the name John Wayne.
Yes.
Really bad stuff. Chon Wang doesn't even sound like John Wayne.
It does when Jackie Chan says it in the film, though.
And then Owen Wilson says, yeah, John Wayne, that doesn't sound like a good cowboy name. Oh, and everyone goes, ah, that's the opposite of the truth. What a hilarious joke. Chon Wang, a clumsy Imperial Guard, trails Princess Pei Pei, played by Lucy Liu, when she's kidnapped from the Forbidden City and transported to America. Wang, yeah, follows her captors. That's not actually true. She's not kidnapped. She thinks she's escaping off her own back.
Well,
and then it turns out it's a kidnapping.
We could have a philosophical debate about whether that's kidnapping or not.
Well, we're finishing this letterbox, and guess what? First topic, philosophical debate about whether she's kidnapped.
Great.
Wang follows her captors to Nevada, where he teams up with an unlikely partner, outcast outlaw Roy O'Banion, Owen Wilson, and tries to spring the princess from her imprisonment. He doesn't try that much. That kind of happens at the very end of the film after a lot of other fucking waffle and shit.
Sure.
But tell me, Joe.
Yep.
Princess Pei Pei,
mm-hmm,
Lucy Liu, she's in the Forbidden City.
That's correct.
We're going straight in.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
She is hooking up with Jason Connery, Sean Connery's son.
Oh, is that Jason Connery?
That's Jason Connery.
Right.
A really shit actor. She says, I want to get out of this Forbidden City. I don't want to get married off.
Sure.
I've got hopes and dreams.
I can't stand the responsibilities of the princess.
Right, which is just to sort of sit about and do nothing, yeah, in the Forbidden City.
That's true.
He says, I'll get you out. I'll get you to America.
Yeah.
And she says, great, get me out to America. So she consents and agrees. He gets her to America. Okay, so in that, at the other end, there's a baddie villain.
Yeah.
Who it turns out is going to use her as a hostage, and then at that point she's kidnapped. Now, are you telling me for the journey over that she's actually kidnapped, even though she's not?
Yes, because she's travelling under false pretenses, and were she to deviate from what appeared to be her consenting plan at any moment, she then would have been restrained from doing so. Therefore, whether she knows it or not, and whether it appears to be that way or not, you can make the argument that Princess Pei Pei has already been kidnapped.
Like, it's the old prisoner's dilemma. Well, it's not called that. That's another one.
That's a different thing.
It's a different thing, but it's the prisoner thing, where if you're in a locked room and you never try and open the door, are you a prisoner?
Right.
If, yeah, you never try it. It might be locked, might not be.
Well, what do you think?
Are you a prisoner? What if you never try the door?
How do you know what's in the cat? Do you know if there's a box inside of the cat? Maybe if the cat's eaten a box.
But no, seriously though, are you a prisoner if you never try the door?
Yes.
But you've never tried to leave, so sure, you're not really imprisoned, right?
Well, I think the state of imprisonment is sort of more of an objective reality, you know?
Right.
Or a subjective reality dependent on the observer. So if I'm not the man, but I know of the man, then the man is imprisoned. If I am the man and I haven't opened the door, then to my subjective reality, I might not be a prisoner. So I think whether someone is a prisoner or not, whether someone has been kidnapped or not, is really just down to the subjective reality of the observer or the person. And in the instance of this film, Shanghai Noon is very, very transparent. So it's clear from the off that Princess Pei Pei has been kidnapped, even though the film hasn't, the dialogue of the film hasn't actually told you that yet. It thinks it's going to trick you later. It really hasn't, because it's a terrible, terrible film.
No, but she's not, like, from her subjective reality,
yeah,
she thinks she's free.
Yeah, so but I'm not her.
She is. No, okay, fine, but also,
I'm me the whole time. So even when I'm watching the film, I'm me, and I know she's been kidnapped. So she's kidnapped. Maybe we should ask the filmmakers, you know? See what their stance is.
Well, this was written by Miles Millar and Alfred Goff.
Right.
who
are they alive?
Oh yeah, they're still alive, but they were the boffins and the minds behind the TV show Smallville.
Oh right,
you know, the Superman TV show Smallville.
Yeah, I watched it when I was a teenager. Smallville.
They were all over Hollywood for a while. We're old Miles Millar and Goff,
right?
Alfred Goff.
Yeah.
Let's find out. I just want to see what other flicks that they directed.
Miles
they
were Millar.
Miles Millar. Yeah.
There's a chap I work with whose name is spelled this way, and he just says Miller.
But there's an A in it.
Yeah, I know, but it's Millar. It's spelled the same way, but it's just Miller.
Well, your mate sounds like a pretentious cunt.
Miller.
He's pretentious for saying it's not, doesn't count. It does count. It's an A.
He's Northern Irish. Try and say it in the Northern Irish accent.
What's
Mallar?
Mallar. Mallar.
Mallar. Mallar. Mallar. Mallar.
Mallar. Mallar. Mallar.
Mallar. Mallar.
Mallar. Mallar.
Mallar.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
Oh, they've written some real shit. They're back doing Wednesday, that stupid Addams Family TV spin-off.
That's nice.
And they wrote the Beetlejuice sequel. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
I thought they had a more interesting career, but it's Stink City. Let's talk about something nice. Jackie Chan.
Oh, Jackie.
He's pretty good in this. He made it just about watchable.
He's good in everything, Jackie Chan.
Not everything.
Jackie Chan has never been bad, I would say.
I think it's when he's great is when he's doing things like if ever he gets hit on the arms a lot,
yeah,
and he rubs them and it looks like he's really hurt.
Yes.
If he doesn't do that in a film, then he's been bad.
No.
He does that in this film, and I love that.
He does that in every film?
No, he doesn't. I've seen him not do that sometimes.
When?
And I think,
when?
You
haven't seen
I'm glad
that.
I'm glad you put me on the spot.
You've definitely not seen that, because it's not true.
In some of his earlier flicks, maybe, he forgot to do it once. And it was only on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
He said he was looking at the cut, and he's like, where's the bit where I get hit on the arms a lot and I rub them?
Sure.
And the director's like, oh, we didn't get a take of that, Jackie. He was kicking himself and then rubbing his shins because that's what happens.
Right.
But like it's the human the humanity he brings to his roles. Like he's great at fighting, but he does get hurt as well.
Well, but that's the great thing about Jackie Chan. I'm going to say this also. I think Jackie Chan is one of the great underrated, undervalued artists of the modern movie era. Because he's in films like this one that are largely really silly most of the time. And I think in comedy films, there can often be an underappreciation generally for the craft that goes into them because they seem so silly and lighthearted when you're watching them. Or in the case of a film like this one, they're just bad. And so you assume, you know, that there isn't any craft involved. But Jackie Chan, not only is he very, very funny, he's extremely compelling to watch. He's just so charismatic on camera that I can't take my eyes off him when he's on screen. And you're absolutely right. His martial arts style is fantastic because it usually just involves him falling around through the set and like just narrowly missing losing the fight by virtue of some coincidental amusing accident that's occurred. He happens to be like the clown who's also the hero, as well as being really good at martial arts, and he always wins the fight despite sort of it never coming across as smug or too good for it. You know, it's like a whole style within itself, and he's absolutely amazing at it. I've never seen anyone else come even close to what he does with that specific style. And if what I'm about to tell you doesn't tell you everything about Jackie Chan, I don't know what does, Adam. He's been in, as an actor, he's been in 150 different things, and he has 8 upcoming projects all being released in the next couple of years. The guy never stops working. He's all over it.
Yeah, but I mean, he should stop working.
No, come on now. How old do you think he is? Do you know? Do you want to take a guess?
60.
Let me just see.
He should stop working because he's not made anything of any note for quite some time, and it's a lot of shit lately. He's sort of too old now to do what he's doing.
Jackie Chan is 71 years old.
Wow, great. I'm out by 2 years.
What?
10 years. Only out by 2 years. What was I going to say? Yeah, he's very Buster Keaton-esque.
Well, he's slapstick, I guess, isn't he? Yeah.
No, but I think specifically Buster Keaton as well. I saw The General for the first time, and yeah, that kind of silent movie star energy, but specifically there's a bit of Chaplin in him as well.
Yeah.
But doing all his own stunts in the same way that Buster Keaton did. Buster Keaton directed his own movies. Jackie Chan did that. So he's the whole package. I think for people who know, they know how important and amazing he is. I think the only people who don't know are people who don't like or watch martial arts movies. And who cares what they think?
Right, yeah. That's probably most people.
I don't think... That's not most people, is it? I mean, his films have made probably like billions... Like certainly China... You're going to say... I think most of China knows who Jackie Chan is. You're being very Western-centric.
No, the question wasn't who knows who Jackie Chan is. The question was, do most people watch and care about martial arts films? I don't know that that's true.
In the West, maybe.
Well, no, but worldwide, that would have to mean that 50% of all people watch and care about martial arts movies.
I mean, you're being very pedantic. I mean, I think like Rush Hour and Shanghai Noon were like buffo films.
Yeah.
I think everyone knows
Big
who
time.
Jackie Chan is. And so, I mean, they might, yeah, maybe I misspoke.
I don't think you did. Initially, I was being pedantic, but then when you accused me of being Western focused, I thought, no, I'm doubling down. Fuck this guy.
Yeah. No, I realised that. And then I thought, oh, forget it. We're getting into egg territory, and I've just got no interest in egg today.
Okay.
So I'll take a little step back and go, yeah, I probably was being a bit misspoken.
Oh, you're the big man, are you? You're the bigger man.
Yeah, I think I am. Oh. I think you're right. Most people don't think enough of Jackie Chan, and they should do. And shame on them.
Thank you.
Well done for pointing it out on this very important platform.
I just thought I was a hero for saying it out loud, and I wanted you to say that of me as well. You know, because I thought I was saying like a great cool thing, and then you were like, anyone that wouldn't think that, not even relevant, are they? No need to say it. And then I was like, hang on a second. Is this guy saying, is this guy the bigger man?
Yeah, I was being rude. I was basically saying what you said was wrong and it wasn't called for.
Right.
Wasn't called for at all.
Hey, speaking of bigger man, I went to the pub today after work with one of my colleagues who I hired before I realised he was 6'6". I don't like that, you know. I feel small around him. I'm not used to being shorter than anyone. Anyway, we went and stood outside the pub for a drink after work today, and wouldn't you know it, a gang of guys, one of whom must have been at least 7 foot, there were about three or four of them maybe, and they were all taller than my colleague who is 6'6". And we stood there sort of quietly questioning, do we think these people are maybe brothers, or did they meet at a place where tall people go? It's too coincidental that there are minimum three people over 6'8" together, and that's unrelated to their height, right? Do you think that could just be a coincidence that there are three people 6'8" and over who are just happen to have become friends, or must it relate to how tall they are?
Not necessarily must. It probably partly does, because they're probably all sick of chatting to people shorter than them, and height always comes up, and they're like, oh, forget this. I just want to talk to someone where this isn't even a topic of conversation.
Yeah.
Or they played basketball locally.
Right.
And they met on a basketball.
They were in suits, but you're right, they could have done that at a different time.
Well, of course, tall men are notoriously succeed more just by virtue of being tall.
I know.
There's like psychological studies.
Yeah.
It's not based on how good they are.
Yeah.
It's just based on the idea of people equating height with being good, which is weird, because I think you think you're tall,
yeah,
but I don't think of you as tall, because you're so kind of inept and buffoonish. You're almost like a giant Jackie Chan in a way.
Right. Yeah.
And I've never thought of you as a tall man, because you're not impressive like most tall men,
whereas I think of you as a tall man, even though you're not.
That's because
I'm actually quite scared of like how you're going to respond to me. And so that comes with it, the sort of vision of you as a larger, more physical, authoritative being, when in reality, actually, you're sort of quite a sort of sparrow-like creature. Funny that.
funny that, isn't it funny?
Isn't it funny that? Like, you seem like someone who would shout boo at a goose, but actually, you know, birds could probably quite comfortably nest around your body.
Yeah, and they can and they do.
Right.
I've got a little robin tucked in my pants this very minute. Hello.
Hello. Is that the local RSPB centre?
Yes. There's a go. Yep. David here. David of the RSPB.
Hi, David. Hi.
How can I help? Can I help?
Well, I've got a bit of an unusual query for you, David. Wasn't sure who else to call. I thought about RSPCA, but I think they're largely for pets, aren't they? Not wildlife. Is that correct?
No, they're for children.
The RSPCA?
Yeah, that's the Royal Service for the Protection of Children, and that's it. And it's just children. And
is it really? What was I thinking of then? That was the one for pets.
The RSPP?
No, I think the RSPCA is the. I've just Googled it, David, and it does say the RSPCA is the largest animal welfare charity in the UK. I'm not sure what one you're thinking of. The NSPCC, aren't you? Or the
No. It's very bold of you to call me up, David of the RSPB, and tell me what I think. And you know, I'm very familiar with all the other charity organisations that. And who they protect.
I've just Googled it, David. It is actually the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. That's the NSPCC.
You keep telling me this. Sorry, what's your name?
Jonathan.
Okay, Jonathan.
Yeah.
It's lovely to be interrupted on my tea break and informed of and listen to a man Googling things.
Sorry, why did you answer the phone if it's on your tea break? I don't know that it's your tea break when I'm calling.
I didn't say you did. I was just informing you of my situation. I just said it's really lovely to be called up whilst I'm on my tea break.
There was a bit of a tone there. Philosophically, I have to say, I'm not sure that I could have interrupted you, given that I don't know that I'm doing any interrupting. Do you know what I'm saying? It's a bit like the prisoner's dilemma.
No, I think you'll find the prisoner's dilemma is something else. That's when you've got a man in a cell and another man in a cell, and then the policeman says to one of them, he says, if you don't admit to the crime, you're gonna go to prison for 100 years. And if you don't admit, and your mate next door does admit to the crime, you're gonna get 100 years.
Right.
If neither of you admit to the crime, you'll both get off scot-free. But if you dob in, and if you both dob in each other, you'll get 25 years.
Right.
So I think that's what you mean by prisoner's dilemma. That's very confusing that you just lobbed that out.
Sorry, David, I just Googled it, and actually I think you're wrong about that. I think you're describing golden balls.
Yeah, no, I was watching that on TV the other day. Mm. Is that David Dickinson TV show, or is that one of the Anton Deck ones?
It's one with the bald man. I'm not clear on his name, but he's definitely not David Dickinson.
So... all it is like, being interrupted is in the eye of the beholder. So, you don't think you've interrupted me. That's fine, you know, but I'm experiencing interruption. I'm not sticking that on you.
Right.
I'm just reporting my state of being.
It just sounded a bit like you were sort of putting it on me, you know.
Well, that's your story you're telling you. I'm not fussed.
I think you're telling me that story.
Yes, you're listening, but you don't have to make that your reality. You don't have to make it all about you. I'm just reporting facts. I could, you know, I was reading a bit of a book, you know. I was having a cup of tea and I was reading a bit of a book. You know, that's my reality.
Right.
And I'm just saying it out loud.
Yeah.
You can do with that information what you will. You can say, oh, I've got a tone. You can be offended. You can be interested. You could be bored. These are all perfectly fine. Just keep it to yourself. And also, don't tell me what the NSPCA is for. I work in the business, mate.
The NSPCA.
You're asking the wrong person. Yeah, that too.
The RSPCA.
Which, all of them. I know what they all are. They've got loads of little letters in, and I know what they all stand for.
Right.
And I tell you what they don't stand for. They don't stand for being interrupted.
If you're going to work for the RSPB, do you know what the RSPB stands for? I hope so, because you do work there.
You would think so, wouldn't you, Jonathan?
Uh-huh.
And it's very presumptuous of you to ask. I'm happy to tell you. It's the Royal Society for Protection of Birds.
That is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, at least you know one of the, you know, I suppose it's not
did
like...
Did you think comedically I would accidentally say something like the rump steak potty botty, you know. Is that what you were hoping? Because I'm a professional and I know who I...
No, I wasn't hoping anything. Based on your lack of awareness of other large charitable beings in the UK, I just assumed that there was a chance that I might have accidentally called the wrong number. You know, because anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about all of this. We've got off to an eggy start. What was your name again, David?
I'll tell you what, who the largest charitable being is. Do you know who the largest charitable being is?
Is it your mum?
No, it's Bob Geldof.
Oh, right.
He's very tall. He's 6'6". He's tall. Remember he did Live Aid? Mm. He's the largest. And the smallest charitable being is...
Ronnie Corbett?
No, it's Midgeur, who also did Live Aid.
Right, right. What genre of book were you reading?
It was Watership Down, so it was rabbits.
Right. Yeah. Rabbits.
Because I'm into nature. That's what got me into to the Royal Society for Protection of Birds. I read Watership Down, and there wasn't a Royal Society for the Protection of Rabbits.
No.
But I thought if I got in on the ground with birds, maybe I could steer them away from birds and towards, you know, lovely, lovely rabbits.
Well, I mean, it is birds and wildlife, isn't it?
You think that, wouldn't you? But it's not. No, it's just birds.
No,
we just do birds. I love that you keep asking questions and then you seem to have the answer. If you know the answer, why do you keep chipping in? Like, you know, it's just baffling.
It's true, actually. Your tone and manner is absolutely... You're not the first person to say that to me.
I imagine it's something your wife brings up. You are married, I imagine.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, if
you
were...
Did you imagine I would be for some kind of comic game?
Yes, Jonathan, I imagine that you were married, and I imagine your wife would bring that up on a regular basis, perhaps on a Sunday.
Right. Well, actually, I'm not married. And okay. If you must know, I'm single, and I'm 55, and I had a vasectomy last year.
I mean, I don't know why those things don't connect.
Well, I just wanted to be... I wanted to be ready for when I meet someone, you know? Because I don't think anyone's going to want to have children with me. I'm 55, and I just thought it would be one sort of less complication in the way of meeting somebody. But that, right. There's always something that happens when I meet new people, I speak to new people for the first time. They take against me for some reason, and
I think it's because you keep any time someone says something, you immediately go, "Let me Google that." Right. Let me Google that, and then you're tapping away.
Well, you know,
that might be part of it.
It is, yeah. I guess that could be
part... Maybe of stop it. Doing that. Maybe take someone's word. Take someone at their word.
No, because in this instance, your word was to confuse large charitable beings, bodies, and it was wrong.
What, I was wrong about Bob Geldof? Is he not 6'6"?
You haven't even asked why I've called.
Well, I can't wait to get back to my book and the rabbits. So just you tell me. I'm not interested, but do tell me why you've called.
I just wanted someone to talk to.
Right. This is what happens. This is what the RSBB has come to. Call the Samaritans next time, mate. Or better yet, take a long walk off a short pier.
Okay.
Yeah? I'm saving birds here, man. I did think... I didn't finish Rush Hour, but I did watch most of Rush Hour after watching Shanghai Noon, because I'd never rewatched that.
I don't think I have either. Do they stand up?
Not really. It's Chris Tucker is great. He's got great energy in it, but it's all just him making jokes about racist jokes,
right,
about Jackie Chan.
Right.
And then that's what Owen Wilson does in Shanghai Noon. And I was just wondering, like, why are buddy movies... What do they all have to be so racist? But then if you look back at the history of buddy movies...
Like culture clash buddy movies.
The buddy movies where they meet the two buddies, they meet each other for the first time. They're mismatched. And they tend to be... like there's a clash of either class or race. you go back to something like, say, Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor in like Silver Streak, is like a good, certainly a comedy template for the buddy movie. But then you had, there's a really good one from the 50s with Sidney Poitier and Tony Curtis, and they're in a chain gang and they escape and they're chained together. Tony Curtis plays a mega racist and Sidney Poitier plays a very proud, smart black guy. And of course they don't get on, but of course they've got to work together. It's actually quite a progressive film. Far more progressive than, you know, when you compare it to something like 48 Hours, where you've got Nick Nolte playing a racist cop and Eddie Murphy playing a felon who has to come out and help him. That film is so racist. Nick Nolte is unapologetically racist. But then it was the 80s, so...
What about Trading Places? Would you consider that a buddy movie, given that the two guys aren't really... They live each other's lives, but they don't really spend that much time together until the end.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't count that as a buddy movie. Planes, Trains and Automobiles is probably a buddy movie. In fact, it is a buddy movie.
And that's the one with John Candy and Steve Martin, right?
Oh, yeah, and that's the one that you don't like.
Yeah.
Right there. Skip talking about
Skip,
that.
Skip, yeah.
I was thinking, my favourite buddy movie of all time is Midnight Run with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin.
I don't think I've ever seen Midnight Run.
Really funny. There's a bit of action in it, and but it's just really sweary. But when I was thinking, like, I don't think anyone's favorite movie of all time is going to be a buddy movie, or
probably
there
not.
Are no great buddy movies, right?
I don't know. What about Thelma and Louise?
Never seen it.
Have you not?
I don't think that counts because they know each other at the beginning. So that for this specific Shanghai Noon centric episode, the buddies have to meet for the first time in the flick.
Okay.
And not like each other. Thelma and Louise like each other.
Oh, right. Okay. They have to not like each other at the beginning.
They have to not like each other.
So Shawshank Redemption doesn't count.
No. Let me give you the criteria are two mismatched people forced into proximity on a shared journey or mission who clash, bond and change each other.
Okay, so like in the case of a film like In Bruges, that they know each other beforehand doesn't discount the film from being a buddy movie. That's a buddy movie, right?
No, it discounts it. But for this episode, it does.
No, but for your description, what you just read.
I mean, okay, we'll add on, they have to meet each other.
Right.
They have to meet each other. Right. You're right.
Seems I didn't, so arbitrary.
Number five is they have... No, it's the Shanghai Noon effect. Because okay. It is a very... There's, otherwise,
so
we could
Green
just end
Book.
Up talking about... Brilliant.
That's a buddy movie.
Never watched it, but...
you know what? It's not... It's all right. The Nice Guys. That's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
That's buddy a pretty movie. Good buddy movie, right?
Lethal Weapon. Buddy movie.
Lethal Weapon.
Shane Black writes a good buddy movie.
Hot Fuzz.
Buddy movie.
Yeah. What about the Intouchable, you know? That French movie.
Yeah, never saw it.
It's
but
really good.
Yeah.
They didn't know each other at the beginning of the film.
And then they become buddies.
And then they become buddies. And it's sort of not that much about race, despite the fact that one of the characters is a young black immigrant in France, and then the other guy is like an old, white, rich French guy. It is a little bit misogynistic, though. And some of that goes unchallenged.
That's fine. It's French.
Right? Yeah.
It's French.
It's French.
I think, ideally, for this, they're going on an actual journey, you know?
Yeah.
There has to be kind of a road trip involved.
There has to be a road... Because in The Untouchables, they definitely go on a journey, just not a physical one.
Yeah, an emotional one. So I would then say, save Intouchable for another time.
Intouchable. Okay.
Intouchable.
Okay.
I mean, the Untouchables, Sean Connery and Elliot Ness... Buddy movie.
Buddy movie.
You know?
White Men Can't Jump.
Buddy movie.
Buddy movie, right?
I mean, you just say a film and then I go, buddy movie.
Yeah.
Is this the segment?
Blades of Glory.
Buddy movie. They don't really go on a journey, though. You know? There's not enough of a road trip in that. So, no.
They definitely travel around.
Not in the road trip sense.
Not in the road trip sense.
No.
Yeah. Okay. What about Bad Boys? No, they know each other at the
beginning. No, they know each other. Stop
doesn't,
saying
doesn't
rubbish
matter that
things.
That they're buddies.
No.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
They're not really hanging around enough.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr. So I'd say no, not really a buddy movie.
Yeah.
No, again, it's obviously a buddy movie, but for the Shanghai Noon buddy movie.
For the purposes
I'm
of this.
About.
Yeah. War Dogs.
No.
What, I mean, what?
They know each other.
Well, no, they knew each other, and then they spent years... They knew each other as they were very young children, and then they moved apart, and then they met each other again as adults.
But they're not... They're very similar. They're not... There's no chalk and cheese between... They're both just dickheads.
There's chalk and cheese. They're supposed to be chalk and cheese.
They're not. There's not enough chalk or cheese.
I'm not saying it's a good buddy movie.
It's cheese and cheese. It's like one's brie and one's cheddar.
Right.
In fact, that's giving it. Like one's hard brie and one's American. No, they're not even brie. One's American cheese and the other one's Dairy Lee.
Right. Yeah.
I like that film actually. I thought it was fine.
The other guys.
No, because they're cops. They're buddies. They know each other at the beginning.
They're not buddies though. They don't really know each other.
Oh, no, they do get to know each other. I hate that film. Anytime, it's weird. Anytime you just say a film I don't like, I just want to say no,
yeah.
Even if it fits the criteria. I'm the wrong person to play the game with, really.
I would say, I know, obviously, forgetting about your specific requirements for,
yeah.
Like the one where they have to meet during the film. I think in to your original question, would anyone describe a buddy movie as their favourite film? I think people would say In Bruges is their favourite film. And I know that they don't meet during the film, but they get to know each other very well in the film. They're on a bit of a road trip or they're fish out of water where they are. They're chalk and cheese. That's got to be like top of the list of this movie's done, or near the top of the list of you know, all-time buddy movies minus the strange requirements that you've added in.
Not strange requirements.
Okay, it's, minus the requirements you've added in.
Let's be clear, the requirement for the protagonists to meet in the movie, that is so many films. There are so many buddy movies that meet that requirement. It's not odd. I'm not like scrubbing out most buddy movies.
Uh-huh.
It's the Shanghai Noon requirement. You're right though. In Bruges is going to be a lot of people's favorite movies. I don't know why. It's perfectly fine. But let's leave that there. Buddy film, sure, buddy movie, but it does not meet the Shanghai Noon requirement.
Oh, Toy Story, Woody and Buzz, they meet during the film, yeah?
Yeah, there's a bit of a journey on there. I think there's too many other characters in Toy Story. It feels like more of an ensemble, but yes, I'll accept Toy Story.
Men in Black.
Yeah, I mean, I think Men in Black is less a buddy movie and more...
a colleague movie.
Colleague space caper,
yeah,
but you know, let's pop it in that bucket.
Hey, it's me. I'm Kevin Bacon. Do you want to play with me game?
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay. Well, listen, for listeners who listened to the last couple of weeks of shows, they'll know we struggled a touch on the last two shows. So we changed the rules up a little bit. 5 minutes before we started recording this evening, I called and gave Adam the two names. And he's had 5 focus minutes to think about it. And then he's had the hour of thinking about it in the background whilst we've been talking so far. So just while you're carrying on that focus thinking there, Adam, I'll tell listeners how the game works. This is the Kevin Bacon game. I give Adam two names of actors. And Adam's job is to find connections through movies between these actors. He doesn't have to find the shortest possible route. He only has to beat me. But the trick is, he doesn't know how many films I've taken to make my connection. So, Adam, today's actors, as you know, are Florence Pugh and Rooney Mara. Okay, what are you thinking?
Well, first off, I want to say I did it in 10 seconds.
Oh.
But I wrote down, my first thing was I just wrote down a little list of films from my mind. So Florence Pugh, I'm instantly thinking Little Women.
Right.
Of course I am.
Yeah, of course.
Thunderbolts, which I just saw at the cinema, which was perfectly fine. Marvel flick. So then that opens up various doors. Black Widow. And then Mara. First thing I'm thinking with Mara, of course, it's Social Network.
Yep.
And then I was still struggling with Mara. And I thought, oh yeah, she's in A Ghost Story, Joe's favourite film. And then she's in the Dragon Tattoo movie.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, oh, this is a good one from Joe. This is a good one.
I thought it was a little tricksy.
But then I remembered that Pugh was in We Live in Time with Andrew Garfield. And so it's Florence Pugh is in We Live in Time with Andrew Garfield. And Andrew Garfield is in the show The Social Network with Rooney Mara.
Oh, yeah. I forgot she was in The Social Network.
She's in that opening scene, and that's
right. And the famous opening scene.
That made her career.
Right.
And also her amazing talent obviously made her career, but that launched her.
Well done. That's very impressive. I wonder if you were able to think so clearly because you were not under any live recording pressure, or whether that was just too easy today.
No, I think it really helped. It's a struggle when you're like nibbling at my ear going, I'm going to have to speed this up in an edit. 2 minutes. It doesn't make it that fun. Fair. So I've enjoyed this version.
Great. Well, do you want to hear my route?
Of course.
You did beat me because you did it in 2, very impressively. I did it in 3. I thought this was quite fun. Now, I started, of course, with Rooney Mara, who was, as you said already, in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, with Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig is in Skyfall with Javier Bardem, who is in Dune 2 with Florence Pugh.
Dune 2 with Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
You, Dune has been rich, fertile fodder.
It's very good for the game, isn't it, Dune?
Dune 2. Yeah. Dune and Dune 2.
Dune and Dune 2. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was the Hi, I'm Kevin Bacon game.
And the Oscar goes to Cameron Crowe for Almost Famous.
This is the first Academy Award and third nomination for Cameron Crowe. In 1996, he was a double nominee for Best Picture and Original Screenplay for Jerry Maguire.
Oh, man. Hi, everybody. I'm Cameron.
Owen Wilson,
he's
sort of shit, right? He's like really shit.
I don't know.
But he just hangs around the toilet bowl and just won't go away. He's never been anything other than shtick. Mm. And I've just thought of that and said it. And
right.
And I'm now opening myself for a conversation where we find the role where he's been something else and something more, but his range is as narrow as my ball bag
penis,
narrow as my banjo string. It's narrow, right?
I mean, I think now you're saying that out loud, yes, the answer probably is true. He does have a rather narrow range. What he does very, very well. It's worth saying.
What does he do?
Well, he does sort of...
And tell me what he does, and then you tell me when he does it very well.
Right.
Notably, because obviously he's in a lot of shit, and he does what he does badly, right? We tried to watch The Internship together,
uh-huh.
And I said, this has to stop. Get this off.
Right.
This is horrible.
Sure, sure.
Let's snuggle.
No, yeah, okay.
So have a think.
Well, I'm having a think. I think what Owen Wilson does, he does have a range. It's not very broad, and you could argue that it's all under the same roof. But it ranges from very silly to, you know, mildly serious. He's very silly in Zoolander. He's very silly in the Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers movies, where he's sort of playing just a kind of more ridiculous character. When he's not lead or a co-lead, he often is a bit more absurd and surreal. So you find that sometimes in some of the Wes Anderson movies he's in, he's just like
I just thought of the Wes Andersons, and that could be the lethal blow to my argument.
It could be.
He is quite silly in the Royal Tenenbaums.
Yes.
He's quite a buffoonish, silly character.
He is a buffoonish, silly character in that. But when it comes to a movie like the Darjeeling Limited, I actually think he does quite a good performance. I think there is a lot of depth and subtlety in his performance in that. It's not different to his usual range. It's still on the range. And I don't think you could take him seriously in an action movie, or I don't think you could drop him into the middle of a drama where you don't want someone to be sort of fusty and lighthearted and a little bit quaint and, but still have the ability to take it all very seriously. I think something he does very well is ride the balance between being bland and watchable and a sort of canvas of sincerity, and then also be someone that's willing to be a bit silly. And I will say, when you get him in a good pairing, I know you didn't like The Internship, but I do think he and Vince Vaughn have some chemistry together. When you get him in a good pairing, he is very good. He can be very funny. But the thing he does very well a little bit later in his career, what he's very good at is sort of like cracking the fourth wall without completely breaking it. You know, he's good at deconstructing or playing the performance of someone who's deconstructing the role that you would expect them to play in a film like this. And he's very believable while he's doing it. And he's sweet and attractive and people like him. You know, I think his big movie, he's been in bigger films that have made more money and in more famous films, but Midnight in Paris was his big movie, right? He's in almost every scene of that film. It's 2011. It's a Woody Allen film. When I look at his filmography, I do think like that was his big opportunity to do something. That would be a standout moment for him, I think, in his career. And after that, he didn't really star in anything again where he was the sole lead in a film that required a bit of emotional range. Like that one did. He's obviously made a lot of money and he's the voice of the car in Cars, and you know, but I think artistically speaking, he never really did another film like that. And I wonder if that's just because it just didn't quite work for him, or people watched it and thought, oh, maybe you're 90% of the way there to being able to do this, but not 100%.
No, I just think he's a spent force. I think he's given up and he doesn't care. He's kind of like Adam Sandler. You see him do a great performance in something like The Darjeeling Limited.
Marley and Me.
Yeah, Marley and Me. But then generally, he's phoning it in a lot of shit in the same way that Sandler does. But then you see Sandler in Punch Drunk Love or Uncut Gems, and you're like, why aren't you in this mode all the time?
Yeah.
And I think it's just because they're hacks and he's a hack.
Do you think he could do it? Like, if he really wanted to, and you sat him down today and said, right, in 2 years' time, you're going to do the performance of your career. Do you think he could dig into himself, find it within himself to do something, show us something new in the Owen Wilson catalogue, have us eating our words and saying, actually, do you know what, that guy's got it?
No. Let's chat a little bit about Shanghai Noon.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to hear what I wrote in my film calendar?
What did you write?
The first paragraph is, 20 minutes in and there's no jokes yet. What is this movie? Is this actually an action film? Where is the comedy? And then the second paragraph, it's a pretty terrible film. Jackie Chan is extremely likable. Owen Wilson's okay too. But it's a marvel that this movie was ever made. It's a Netflix movie today. And I can't believe there was a sequel made. I was pretty uninspired by the film, I'll be honest with you. And also, it's worth saying, we originally were supposed to record this episode a week ago, and then we couldn't. So I watched this film a week ago, and in 5 days, six days, I can barely remember anything about it. I will never revisit the film. It's not good.
Yeah, I'd never revisited it. I saw it in the cinema, as I announced last week. I gave it 2.5 stars this time. Felt fresh and fun back in the day, but oof, is it a dated slog now. Sure, some lovely Chan bits and one great line from Wilson, but this has no business being 110 effing mins. Mm. It's just told, it's really, there's nothing to this film, there's nothing to the story. Wilson and Chan, like, meet together, they have a meet cute, they don't like each other because Wilson's buddy has killed Chan's uncle, which swiftly gets forgotten. And then they kind of keep getting thrown back together again, which is kind of, it kind of works. And Chan's just got to go and save Lucy Liu. But the whole, for about, I don't know, 70 minutes, they just like amble through the West. And nothing happens. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of fights. It's deeply offensive to Native Americans.
Sure.
Horrible, horrible bit of business with like Jackie Chan meeting a tribe, and of course they're so backward. They marry off one of the young women to Jackie Chan, a guy who's just turned up. Mm-hmm. And then that woman, she just turns into the Deus Ex Machina of the whole movie. Whenever Owen Wilson and Jackie Chan are in trouble, she comes and saves them.
Yes.
And then disappears.
It's problematic in a way that would have been considered progressive at the time, because the producers or the people making the film would have said, yeah, we know it's like a bit tropey, but like they're the heroes of the film. It turns out like actually like they're the best characters and they're smarter than everyone else. And you watch it now, 25 years later, and you go, it's just racist. Do you know what? The best thing I can say about this film, and it's not a good thing about the film, it's the best thing I can say, is... this is a shit film that left me with nothing to say. And it wasn't shit in a way that I thought, oh, that's funny, we can talk about that. It was just shit, and it sapped my energy away, and I don't want to talk about it.
Box office, mate? Should we do the box office?
I'd love to play the box office, largely because I want to understand why they made a sequel. And maybe they did that in the past without having to have made loads of money. I don't know. You'll find out. So, budget, brackets estimated, what do you think they spent on this film? And just a reminder that it was released May the 28th, the year 2000.
Well, you know, you asked that question, like, what was Jackie Chan's first big Hollywood flick?
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, I wanted to be impressive and say, oh, well, yeah, I remembered he was in Cannonball Run. I don't think that really counts, right? And I'm thinking, like, was this his first proper big bow in... For the Western audience, do you know what it is?
I don't. What is it?
Was it Rush Hour? But yeah, that's why Shanghai Noon gets made, because Rush Hour
was a big deal.
Big deal, mm-hmm. Boffo box office.
Yeah, they said, hey, Chan worked well with an African American. Let's put him with a Caucasian now and see what happens.
He was with a fast talker in Rush Hour. Let's get him with a slow talker in the West.
Yeah, why not? He's the real consistent figure here.
So, okay, budget. I mean, because it's got, you know, there's leather chaps.
Yeah.
There's some explosions. The finale of the film, it feels like they're heading towards this big, big action finale, like where the sort of Chinese slaves are slogging their guts out, like digging a railroad. And then it's just in this, it's just a really small, tiny fight in a church.
Yes.
And I kept thinking... Is this the finale?
Yeah, I know, right.
Have they run out of money? I think they've run out of money.
Well.
So, $50 million? That feels a lot, for quite punchy for this. No, let's say $40 million.
Well, you should have stuck to your guns. $55 million. I have no idea what they spent that money on. Maybe film was just so much more expensive back in the day. I don't know. But that feels like an extraordinary amount of money for this film. And I think were they to make a film like this today, what do you think they could spend 15 on it, maybe?
Right, so there was this buddy movie with Kumail Nanjiani and Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
It was called Stuber, and it was straight to Netflix, I think. It was, well, if it wasn't, it was like that. 2019, and the budget was... oh, look at you. $18 million.
There you go.
That's what they're spending on these kinds of action comedy buddy flicks.
These days. All right, $55 million budget, brackets estimated. Opening weekend, US and Canada. What is the pull of the buddy movie between Owen Wilson and Jackie Chan?
I think this is going to be jumper territory, because people, they love Owen Wilson's shtick. They've seen it in... have they seen it? I'm pretty sure they've seen it in Wedding Crashers by now.
No, Wedding Crashers is after that.
Is this when Owen Wilson goes big?
Before the year 2000, when he starred in this film, Shanghai Noon. Incidentally, he was also in Meet the Parents in that supporting role the same year. The year before, he was in The Haunting, Breakfast of Champions, The Minus Man, Armageddon, The Cable Guy in 1996. I mean, this is his big movie, yeah. And then in 2001, he's in Zoolander and the Royal Tenenbaums and behind Enemy Lines.
Yeah, I think he'd been knocking around and everyone just knew this guy was, he's charismatic and he's funny and let's get him in a movie.
Yeah, because of course, like Bottle Rocket was only released in 1996. That was his. That was Wes Anderson's first movie that he co-wrote with him, right? That's only 4 years before this. Quite a big jump in that time.
Ooh, what a rise. Yeah. What a rise to fame from Owen Wilson.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people are not going to see, they're turning up for Chan, they're turning up for some more Rush Hour, and the trailer will sell it, and it's going to be Jumper territory. It's going to be 20 mil.
Well, Jumper was 27 mil.
I know. Jumper territory is what I say. It's a realm. It's not Jumper territory. It's Jumper territory isn't 27. That's exactly what Jumper made.
That's Jumper, not Jumper territory.
That's just Jump. Exactly. Yeah. It's just like, oh, this is what Jumper
made.
Do
you know what? I take it back. That's an excellent point.
Thank you.
Well, do you know what? That's one of the best points you've ever made. And if you were able on more occasions to use sort of rational thought to bring me down, I'd really approve of that. Not too far off with your $20 million guess. It took $15.5 million.
Right, that's what, because I knew it wasn't Jumper.
Would you call that Jumper territory, though? Because
absolutely not.
No, because that's half of Jumper.
Yeah, absolutely right. Not. That's a sweater.
That's a sweater, yeah.
A short-sleeve sweater.
Well, you know now, of course, the guidelines for gross worldwide, the multiplier we generally use is a 10x.
No, not we.
We, you.
There's no we.
What do you think about that for gross worldwide? Is this movie taken in dollar?
It'll probably do 10 times. Actually, no, because 15, I feel like quite an underperformance.
Sure. Anyway, we always say, don't we, with the I always say with the 10x guideline that you've also got to add in those extra multipliers for whether the film's any good or not. Word of mouth travels in the year 2000. You know, are people going to go and see this and then say to their friends, "You absolutely have to see it"? Maybe they did in the year 2000.
Makes,
I don't know.
Which makes the multiplier just null and void.
It doesn't. It really,
no
it really
whatsoever.
Doesn't. It really doesn't.
It really does. I think sadly the word of mouth and critical response to this was fairly warm and like, yeah, this is pretty good fun. For the year 2000, I think people would have ate this up with a spoon. Does it? And also they'd make a sequel. So for it to make a sequel,
how much money would this have to make given it cost $55 million in the budget to be worthy of a sequel?
Well, you know what they're spending on the marketing? They're spending at least, you know, 25 mil on the marketing.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's got to make at least 150 for them to kind of go, hello.
Hello.
Hello, let's make some more. So, yeah, let's say 150.
It didn't make 150, Adam. It didn't make 100. It made $99 million gross worldwide. Which is one of the reasons I'm very surprised that they did make a sequel. Incidentally, they spent $50 million on the sequel. That took $19 million on its opening weekend, and that only grossed $88 million worldwide. So I feel as though they weren't like hugely successful films, although perhaps they, you know, they must have made some money.
You're talking about box office. This isn't about how much they made on DVD.
Right, right, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I can see this, mate. And this is always going to be on ITV2 forever. So it's been a money spinner.
I'm going to see if I can find the DVD sales figures.
Trying to find out the DVD sales. DVD sales for... Aaron Taylor Johnson is in Shanghai Nights. Imagine that.
What?
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Really?
Oops, a young Aaron Taylor Johnson. He plays Charlie Chaplin.
Wow.
Oh, I really want to watch it now.
How bizarre.
How disappointing it would be to see him in the background as Charlie Chaplin.
Let's never talk about this film again. Let's pick another one.
Are you giving up now trying to find out the thing?
I can't. I don't think they share that information anywhere.
I don't think they do. They don't want people to know because the tax man will find out and say, "Can we have some tax?" And the studios go, "No, you can't have some tax." They cook the books, all of them. rotten business. Anyone who makes movies is a scumbag.
A scam artist.
Scam artist. Scum.
Yeah.
Weinsteins. The lot of them. No. Every single one. Every single man jack of them. Right. Weinstein.
Yeah.
That's not libelous, is it? Because I've not said it about anyone specific.
Right. Yeah, I think it is. It's,
what? To say all people involved in the film industry are basically like Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, I think so.
Right, okay, well, maybe cut it out.
Yeah.
Well,
let's talk about killing. We know it's using the air shaft. Will you listen to me? Shut up!
It's time for, and this isn't a game, this is a feature, where we pick next week's movie.
Yeah.
One of us reads out a list of movies that they forgot, or films, to try and catch out the other one that they forgot to pick and pick.
Let's be really clear, though, that it's not a game. It's a feature, right?
It's a feature.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, because you thought we had too many games going on, and for the flow of it, you're like, you finished the box office game? What, there's another game? Oh, the audience, they'll think this whole thing is games.
They'll just think we're having fun and games. What if we were having a game and a feature? Sort of a trick, isn't it? Kind of like a really clever trick.
So let's do the feature. I'm going to read out a list of films, and if I don't get you in five,
yeah,
we go to the communal list.
Let me just say, before you start, I'm really sorry that I included Shanghai Noon on the list. I'll be much more careful next time about the films I include.
Good. Apology accepted. It was Plum.
Plum isn't always good, is it?
Plum is good. It was felt like Plum, but it was actually Rotten Fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's actually too shit.
Yeah.
I think it's too shit to count.
Too shit.
But we had to find out, it seemed.
Boy, did we find out.
So I'm going to read out a list.
Yep.
Before I was so rudely interrupted, there is a communal list, which is pretty much all it is that's you, the listener. You send in your suggestions, and we add them to the list. And if I don't get Joe out, we will turn to this communal list and we will pluck one of your suggestions. What is a movie that you forgot? And we'll do it even if we haven't seen it.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, I'm going to swing for the fences for these. I know that there is definitely one I'll get you on. So.
Yep.
Filth.
With James McAvoy.
Yeah.
It's not Plum. I don't know if it's enough of a forgot you forgot. I feel like some days I could probably say yes to this. But I did watch it about 3 years ago. On balance, I'm going to say not forgotten enough.
Pan's Labyrinth. This is a great topic, a great film for us to do.
Yeah. I only watched it the once.
Oh, that's the sweet, sweet sound.
I didn't like it, and I don't like the vibe. Do you know what? I'm on the edge of vetoing it.
If you want to veto it, veto it. I think it's a mistake. I think you would. It's not scary. Are you worried it's scary?
No, I'm not worried. I'm not worried it's scared. I'm grumpy, and I want to watch something that I know I will enjoy. Because I have limited time between now and next record. How about this instead? Can I introduce the third? Like, so instead of saying yes, no, or veto, can I introduce the third option, which is to say, that is Plum, but I'd love... Can you put that Plum in your back pocket and bring it to me when I'm less sad?
Yeah, you've played that card before.
Have I?
Yeah. You're like, oh, I don't want to watch Dunkirk.
Right.
Can we do it another time? And I'm always like, of course.
Okay,
I plumbed
great.
You.
I think you've plumbed me with that, but I don't want it today.
True Lies.
Is that the one with
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Oh.
And Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh no. Yeah, no, in the scene of the limo at the end. No, I haven't forgotten that.
Yeah, that's a shame. I think it would have been a good one. Okay. You see, you thought you had me last week on a film that you maintain is a good film.
Uh-huh.
But given that you really fucked it with Shanghai Noon,
yeah,
I'm concerned that I took a note of it because I thought, oh yeah, let's do this. I'll say this to Joe and he'll be happy. But I'm just really worried about your taste because I think it's shit.
Wait,
and I'm thinking cheaper.
What is it?
Cheaper by the dozen.
I do want to watch that. That will make me happy.
Okay, now I'm gonna. This is me.
Yeah.
Being kind.
That's very kind.
Okay, great. Okay, well, good. Well, that's what we're doing. We're going to do Cheaper by the Dozen.
Great. That sounds great. I could watch that tonight. Jonathan Powell wrote in, Adam, to say, hi, regarding your recent Pitt versus Clooney discussions, you both seemed to agree that Clooney, unlike Pitt, couldn't do action. In that case, The Peacemaker starring Clooney and Nicole Kidman must be prime movie you forgot. Keep up the excellent movie or film chat, Jonathan Powell.
He's right, it is. I'd love to do that, but I know you haven't seen it. So.
I haven't seen it, yeah. Unfortunately, I'm the weak link in this chain.
But if it was on the communal list... I would say let's do that, and
yeah.
We'd do it because it's on the communal list, and we'd have to do it. So
yeah, I will tell you that you will want to read this one, Adam. There's a long email from Joaquin Fuster why Christopher Nolan is a bad director according to the criteria of movies you forgot,
which is like holding me to account for things I've said. Ooh, yeah, I love it when people do that.
It's not that
criteria. One of the criteria will be when I moan about how long films are, and they'll go, oh, well, Nolan's films are too long. As long as the film earns its runtime, I've not even read the email, and I know that's what will be one of the points. As long as the film earns its runtime, then it's fine. I have no problems with a long film.
No,
it
absolutely.
It just has to earn it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, you'll get him. You'll have a read of that one. Okay, Tanner Williams writes in and says, hello, I just listened to the Dunkirk episode and was thrilled to listen to a candid conversation between Tom Hardy and his parents. Such riveting insight. However, it was pointed out by Joe that Mrs. Hardy sounds eerily like Andy Serkis during his portrayal of Gollum. Any chance we can get a game in the future called Who Said That Line? Mrs. Hardy or Gollum? For example, was it Gollum, a character famously written by the legendary author J.R.R. Tolkien, or Mrs. Hardy, who famously said... what men want is to comes and goes as they pleases. I want them to fuck off as well. And I guess all I likes.
Yeah, who did say that? That's a Gollum line,
I can't
right?
remember. I think so, yeah. Master, what men's want is to comes and goes as they pleases, master. Yeah. Thanks very much for that, Tanner Williams. That really, really made me laugh.